Welcome to Kicking Back with Gilbert McAdam for another great episode. Got two great guests with us today. We've got Leon Davis and we've got Joel Garner. Not the cricketer Joel Garner, but anyway, we'll talk about that a little bit longer. The topic for today's show is the Sparks. Now, today you call it the X Factor, the people who can make something out of nothing. Well, I'll tell you what, this bloke made something out of nothing and I'm very happy to say that we've got Leon Davis on the show. Leon, thanks for coming in, brother.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, look, great to see you. And Joel, great to see you, my brother, and ex-Port Adelaide power player. And we're going to talk a bit later about he just played in a grand final up in Darwin, the AFL-NT. Good to see you, brother.
Thanks, brother. Thanks for having me.
No worries. All right, back to you, Leapin' Leon. That was your nickname, or one of your nicknames back then. All right, brother. Sparks. X factors. Who's your X factor that you love watching football today?
Yeah, there's a few out there. Well, I'm probably a bit biased in this one, but yeah, Bobby Hill's one that, yeah, his family grew up in Northern, the same town I grew up in, and very, very close family. So to see him go through the journey he's been on and the challenges he's faced throughout his career and his life to bounce back and have the season that he did last year and see him enjoying his footy. It's definitely something that's pleasing for myself, and to see him do it at the Magpies is another bonus for me. So played a lot of years there, and to have him at the club now and playing his best footy and really enjoying it is something that I like to see. But like I said before, there's so many good, you know, small forwards going around now. I think they've changed the game in the way they play and the way they go about it. So it's always good to watch games of footy, whether it's Friday night, Saturday night, or whatever it is, and take interest in watching the small forwards go about their craft and play their game.
Nah, brother, do you get back to the club or do you get to speak to him sometimes?
Yeah, I work full-time at the club. I do a lot of work from home and I'm in there every when I can get down and do a lot of work there now in the cultural space. So every time I'm in at the club, I'll try and catch up with him and Ash and Nathan and just get around the team and try and support him where I can and not overstep at all. So, but it's always good to see Bobby and support him, being family. So, yeah, it's good to get back there.
Ah, too deadly, brother. Now, Joel, you're at Richmond, obviously, with the VFL club at the moment, and there's a bloke from Richmond that I love watching. His name's Shea Bolton.
Yep.
He's got to be up there, one of the best, brother. Tell us who your favourites are.
He's pretty good. I love Shea's work. He's a great kid and obviously full of talent, winning Richmond heaps of games. But there's another fella down there, Ryan Mansell, I think, Tasmanian boy.
Oh, okay.
A little bit tough. Can, you know, good kick, long kick, had a great pre-season. So I think he's one with heaps of X factor coming through.
Leon, back to you, my brother. Now, when you was coming through the system, you know, there was probably, well, the Wiz was probably playing then. What a champion the Wiz was. He was just such a beautiful player to watch. Well, I didn't mind Stephen Milne, my ex-St. Kilda player. Yep, and yep. Eddie Betts. Who did you look up to? But who inspired you to kick those freaky goals that Leon Davis used to do?
yeah, the Wiz was one. Yeah, remember a game we played against him, he didn't hardly get a kick in the first half, but then he come out and kick nine in the second half.
Yeah,
definitely. So but yeah, he was one that, you know, when I came into the game, he'd played had a few years under his belt and he really looked after me. So but yeah, for mine it what inspired me to play and play my best footy and want to play AFL was, you know, guys like yourself, Gil, like, you know, that paved the way for us to come through the system
and
made it easier. And so anyone that played before my time, I always took interest in, you know, any game of footy I was able to watch. We always looked out for the, you know, for our mob that was playing and see how they go about it. But they, yeah, no, you guys really paved the way for us to come through and play. So anyone that played before me, but yeah, Jeff Farmer was one, Longy, you know, Nicky, yourself, like I said, you know, Peter Matera, Chris Lewis, obviously being WA boy, I got to watch a lot of Eagles games.
Oh, what a champion.
They didn't show any, you know, many more games because, you know, West Australians worried about themselves. So didn't watch too much footy other than the West Coast Eagles games and then Fremantle when they came in. So, but yeah, Peter Matera and Chris Lewis, they were two that, you know, they gave back to their community and remember them coming to my primary school when I was little. So to fast forward to when I got drafted, I think I played a season against Peter. So that was amazing to be able to get that opportunity. Wow. So, yeah, those guys that, you know, like I said, paved the way for us to come through and have the process for us to make it easy for us was definitely something that I appreciated.
Oh, that's as a former player, that's just so good to hear that we actually encouraged a lot of young ones. So that's deadly, brother. Joel, now a lot of people don't know, you're from Hillsville Way.
Yep.
Now, when you grew up, Who was your favourite? You must have been a Victorian player, surely.
More Victorians. Well, I'm a Hawthorn supporter as a kid, so I was, you know, in love
with Sue Rowley,
Buddy Franklin, Shawnee Burgoyne, those sort of fellas. So they were my heroes growing up. Got to meet, Buddy one day down in a little place called Seville in the Yarra Valley. He made the trip out.
Did you say anything to Buddy? Because what could you say to Buddy?
Well, I was about 10, I reckon. He would have been a young fella too, but he was not much. Didn't give him any advice, that's for sure. But he made the trip out to the Yarra Valley one cold morning, so he rushed down because had a lady lived across the road from the Oval and said, you better come down, Buddy Franklin's here. So Mum chucked us in the car, we went down and said g'day. So, yeah, big Hawthorn supporter growing up.
Ah, too deadly, brother. Hey, when there's an X factor and there's a forward bloke that can kick goals, he's got an opponent. Now, Leon, tell us, who was your hardest opponent, and who is there someone that you just didn't like to stand? Because, you know, I remember sometimes when I used to play and this guy would niggle the living daylights out of you. Mm. Who was that?
Unfortunately for me, coming in as a young kid, you know, I played against Chrissy Johnston in his prime.
Oh, wow. So every time you played Brisbane, Chrissy Johnston.
Yeah, definitely. So okay. as much as he looked after his mob and looked after me, you know, he's a very... You know, once he played and got on the field, he took it serious and played his game and helped his team win. So unfortunately for me, I was very young at the time and, you know, fresh coming through and had to come up against a very seasoned and well-accomplished Chrissy Johnston. So that was a hard one. Wow. But, you know, every week, you know, you have your opponents and they go, you know, they do their homework, you got to do yours and, you know, you come up against a tough opponent each week. But, you know, you got to find those little edges and you got to put the work in during the pre-season, that kind of stuff, to be able to beat them and play at your best too.
And sometimes people don't understand that when you play that team every time, he comes to you, doesn't he?
Definitely.
It's not like a different player comes to you. Yep. It's that same bloke. And Guy McKenna used to be that man when I used to play. I used to think, here he goes, Guy McKenna's coming today.
Yeah. Like, that's something you look forward to. And, you know, our backline players, you know, we taught that and spoke on that regularly about, you know, if you do well against a certain opponent on that team, you know, for the next 10 years, and you're both young, for the next 10 years, you can be playing against them and it could be a battle going. Like, you see the Wayne Carey, Glenn Jakovich kind of, you know, battle that they went through.
Spot on.
Back when I was young watching footy, you know, I remember that and all the hype it got. But them little battles go on, whether it's a midfield, backline, forward line, whatever it is.
Yeah.
In the coach's box as well, two coaches going against each other. So
yep.
For mine, it was, every week you come up against someone and you got to find the edge, you got to get the edge, you got to try each time to learn from your last game.
Exactly.
To try and beat them, you know, in any way you could do that. And funny you say, Guy McKenna, he was a coach at Collingwood for us for a little bit, and he actually spoke on that, you know, talking about, you know, every time you come up against a team, you know, you're going to play pretty much on the same guy nearly every time.
Exactly.
You know, whether they're in form or not. So, those kind of battles you have. Like I said, every week you come up against someone and you knew it was going to be a battle. You had to prepare properly, had to have your diet down pat, and you had to get the edge that you needed to be able to play some good footy. So.
Yeah, brother, well said. Now, Joel, a lot of people might know the position you used to play back at Port Power and coming through the system as a junior, like Tack Cup, you might have come through that system.
Yep.
What position did you play, brother, when you was coming through?
Well, I had no X factor, so I played a lot back line, back pocket, half back flank.
So were you one of them players that stood the X factor?
I stood the X factor and normally lost most of the time. So when I was in Adelaide, spent a lot of time playing in the twos and the samples. So, fellas like Isaac Rankin coming through when he was 17, I would have been 18 or 19, and he chopped me up pretty good.
Not a bad player, is he?
Very good player. Yeah. And before he got drafted, I played a lot of footy on Shane McAdam. When he was at Sturt.
My nephew.
We used to play, I probably stood him 6 or 7 times before he got drafted.
That's when you were at Port Power at the time?
Yeah, in the Magpies. So we used to have a really good duel, and there's some games where he stood on my head a few times, and we had some nail-biter games. So he was one that I remember playing a lot, yeah.
Oh, too deadly, brother. All right, we're going to talk about the banana, brother, because, I call it the boomerang. People, different definitions. Banana, you were pretty good at it, brother. You could do it from both sides, left and right. What made you so good at it?
I think just repetition. I think practice.
Practice.
You know, look, growing up in Northern, little country town, like I mentioned before, I've got a younger brother, an older brother, plenty of cousins. You know, it wasn't standing 20 metres out in front trying to kick goals.
No.
All over on the boundary before training.
All on the boundary,
after training,
almost.
During training, you know, and we're just practicing, you know. I was one that, you know, that always carried a footy around wherever I went.
Yeah.
If I was riding a bike, I wedged it underneath the frame of the bike so I could carry it.
Yep.
I always had a footy when I was walking around, you know. It was always two sticks or a fork in a tree or whatever it was, you know, and always just trying to, you know, kick that ball through there. So it wasn't like, you know, I made AFL and then, you know, started doing the banana. It was something that I've done from, you know, when I, from the first time I kick a footy. So it was, yeah, just repetition and practice. And then fortunately enough, you don't even have to think twice about it. I think it's the same with anything you do.
Instinct?
Yeah, definitely. Anything you do in football, you know, if you do it enough times, you know, it's going to come natural in a game. So unfortunately for me, I've, you know, put in the work over the years of just practicing. And, you know, when I played at the top level, it just, yeah, came off more times than not, which I was happy about.
Now, Joel, when I watch the modern day game today, I get frustrated when I watch some of these forwards having a shot at goal. And you can clearly go back and it's a clear drop punt, right? It's a clear drop punt. You know, they're only 30 metres out. They're not even on an angle. And they're 30 metres out, and they go for the banana.
Go around the corner.
Now, just go back for a drop punt. Does that frustrate you?
It'd be easier,
you?
Wouldn't it?
Well, yeah. Does it frustrate you? Because we had it on the weekend. I seen about four goals that should have been goals that were missed because it was a banana or a boomerang.
Yeah. Well, it can be hard, I reckon. They practice all the time from directly in front of training, and, yeah, come game day, you know, instinct takes over, they want to try something a bit different. But Shay does that a little bit. He kicks around the corner every now and then, but he kicks most of his one, which is good.
He can do whatever he wants. Goal of the year, bruv. Now, I've been nominated for a goal of the year. I've never won one like you did.
Yep.
You won one back in 2008. Was that a banana?
No, it was a drop punt. It looked like a banana, though. It floated a little bit. But, a bit of pressure and, kick one from the boundary. So, fortunate enough that it was voted goal of the year for that year.
What'd you get for it? A car?
No, I didn't. What was it, I think?
$3,000?
No, actually, I got a hire car for a year, so I had to give it back.
Oh, that's a bit rough.
I felt like giving a goal a year back too, but I couldn't. So, but it was good. The pleasing thing about kicking the goal of the year that year was it was back in WA. At old Subiaco Oval, in front of my mob, so in front of the family, mum and dad.
So that was at home?
That was in Perth, WA. So, it was really pleasing to do that back home in front of the family, so it made it even more special.
Oh, especially at home and family watching, definitely. Nothing better than that. Now, Joel, tell us about what you're doing. I know you're with the Richmond VFL. I know you're working at the AFL, which you'll tell us about, but Brass, a lot of people don't know, you just played in a grand final in Darwin about 2-3 days ago. He played in the AFL NT Grand Final for the team. Yes, everyone expects St. Mary's to be in a Grand Final, and they did win it again, probably their 28th, 29th or 30th premiership. I don't know how many they've won. But
34.
Are you serious?
34, Danny, yeah.
All right,
yep.
I don't want to repeat that again. Now, brother, how good are you? Because you won the Grand Final, but you won the Cheney Medal, which is an equivalent to the Norm Smith Medal for the best on ground. Brother, how good are you? Tell us about that, come on.
Pretty amazing honour, yeah. It was a shocking day in Darwin. It was wet, muddy, so very Victorian sort of conditions. So flying up there suited
terrible
me a
conditions.
Bit. Yeah, terrible.
There Sloppy. Was a cyclone hanging around.
Yeah, and they had 6 or 8 games on before our game, so the ground was literally like a bit of a pigsty. But, yeah, sort of suited me, and we were lucky enough to get the win. Nycliffe, you know, they beat us 3 times during the year, and we just got lucky in the grand final and beat them in the 4th game we played. So, yeah, it all counts at the end of the day, really, when you win them. So,
yeah, Joel, before I made it to the Sandfall and made it to the AFL back in the day, I actually played up in Darwin, and I know what it was like. I played there in my younger days, and a lot of Southerners, we call them Southerners, and they're people from down south, Melbourne, Adelaide, wherever, as long as you're south of the border, that's what we call you, Southerners. So, what made you go there and what was the attraction to St. Mary's? Tell us.
Yeah, well, working at the club, Xavier Clark was at Richmond at the time and
ex-Saint.
And obviously with Daniel and Morris there too, I sort of mentioned to them that I was keen on playing some footy up north. I thought it would sort of help my, you know, VFL sort of pre-season, you know, with the heat and humidity up there, sort of work me out. But, yeah, those boys got me in touch with the crew at St. Mary's and, yeah, as you know, it's a great family club and...
Ralph was there?
Ralph was there, yep. Long boys too. So, yeah, Jacob Long played in the grand final on the weekend and...
Michael's son?
Yeah. And we just had a great time. It was a great win. Good celebration the last few days. So, yeah, it's been good.
Gee, you look all right, brother, for a couple of days.
I'm okay.
Brother, bring it out. I know you've got a couple...
You want to see it?
You've got a couple of medals there. Now, you've got the premiership medal. Let's have a look at it.
It's heavy.
It's heavy, isn't it,
yeah.
brother?
Real heavy.
Gee, it'd be nice if that was gold, wouldn't it? Show us the other one, because you won the... No.
I bought the other one too, yeah. That's, look, it's brother, a little bit little.
Well, that's okay. Now, this is equivalent to the Norm Smith medal. It's not the Norm Smith medal, but it's equivalent. So when you're talking status, brother, that's not many blokes have got this medal, so you should be very happy and a very proud person that you won it.
Pretty honoured, yeah. It was a great game. We just had heaps of fun. That was sort of our mentality going in, just have fun and let, you know, your best footy play when you're enjoying it with your friends. So that's sort of what we went into. Not too stressed about the game or nothing. We were all laughing before we went out there. And as I said before, you know, they beat us 3 times this year, so we just sort of had to go in calm and relaxed. And
so they didn't beat you all year?
No, we didn't beat them all year, yeah. So they beat us two weeks ago to get into the grand final, and then we had to go the long way around and beat Crocs last week and then, yeah, come in with a bit of form and chopped them up on the weekend. So it was good. Yeah.
Nah, well done, brother. And you going back next
I'll go week? Back, yeah, definitely go back. Yeah, might stay there a bit longer this time too, but I'll definitely go back, yeah.
Oh, well, I'd love to see you playing at Richmond, brother.
Yeah.
But either good. Way, all the best, all right?
Appreciate it. Thanks, Kelly.
Now, Joel, producer Tyrone here, congratulations on winning the NTFL Grand Final, by the way. Huge honour. But you might not know that the man in front of you is actually in the Northern Territory Football Hall of Fame, Gilly McAdam, but you actually did something that he never did in the NT, and that is win best on ground in a grand final. Mm. What's it like to have that sort of achievement compared to a Hall of Famer right in front of you? Know that you've done something that a Hall of Famer hasn't.
Well, a great man sitting right in front of me, so pretty honoured. Yeah, it's obviously Hall of Fame's an incredible achievement. So yeah, but to win one of these, yeah, just lucky on the day, could have been any 22 of the blokes we had out there. But obviously, yeah, one up on Gilly here, so you might have to go back and play, brother.
No,
you
brother.
Have to get out there and try to get one.
There's no chance of that happening, I'll tell
you. Don't dwindle your achievement, but you've played in 3 different places now. You've played in Adelaide, the Northern Territory. If you had to pick one place to live, would it be Melbourne, Adelaide or Darwin?
I like Darwin lifestyle. I could go live in Darwin very easily, I think, yeah. Melbourne's home, but I could live in Darwin for a long time, I think, yeah. Mum and Dad might not be too happy about that, though.
You're working with the AFL. Tell us quickly what you're doing there.
Yes, I work at Richmond Footy Club as their Indigenous Player Development Manager.
That's great.
Yeah,
that's great.
It's awesome. You know, when I was going through, we didn't have those people in the footy club, and that wasn't even too long ago. So it's pretty amazing that every club now has, an Indigenous PDM to look after the brother boys at the footy club.
Every club in the AFL has got that position.
Everyone's got one. Yep, every footy club has to have one, which is awesome.
And are all those positions filled?
They are, yeah.
Well done.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, great effort by the AFL. So it's a pretty cool initiative and a pretty cool place to work as well, the Richmond Footy Club.
Yeah, and we need our people to be a part of the club for that support. So, brother, well done. And you keep up the good work, brother. And congratulations. My old team, Waratahs, never got there, but well done, brother. Because they can't take they'll never take that Cheney medal away from you, bruss, that's for sure. All right. Now, Lip and Leon, last year, you was there when I was there. We had a healing ceremony at Vic Park.
Yep.
Obviously because of the incident with Nick and myself. And, gee, what a magnificent evening that was.
Yeah, it was.
Now, I'm very pleased to say to everyone out there is that it's happening again. It's happening on the 21st of April at Vic Park from 2 till 6 p.m. There's going to be entertainment there and there's going to be traditional dances. It's going to be I call it a blackout. That's what it's going to be. Don't worry about that. So, brother, you was a part of it last year. How good was it and how good it's going to be this year?
Yeah, I think, you know, for mine, you know, any time you can get mobbed together to celebrate and have the opportunity to heal, you know, it's going to be powerful. So, you know, first and foremost, last year was amazing to get there and get yourself and Nikki there and a lot of mob as well to come along and support you guys to go back to a place where, you know, a lot of trauma happened. Mm. A very, very traumatic event happened there, and it was great to have it at Vic Park where it happened. So to get back there with a lot of mob and get back onto that ground where it happened, I think was very, very powerful for not only your healing and not only Nikki's healing, but everyone's healing on, you know, what we face in this in society since settlement. So to have that opportunity to go there and, you know, celebrate that we have survived and we're still here and we're still thriving and, you know, our culture is still very strong and powerful. Was very, very good to see. So for it to be happening again is a credit to Nathan and, you know, his team for organising and getting the partners on board to have that go around again. So like you mentioned, it's a great opportunity to get down and see some traditional dances and a lot of culture, and just have an afternoon where, you know, we can enjoy each other's company and have an opportunity to heal from whatever, you know, history and whatever feelings you got from stuff you might have went through. So to get mobbed together for that kind of reason is powerful, and yeah, hopefully a lot of people get along, and I'll be there, and yeah, looking forward
and
to it.
I'll be there too, brother.
Very good.
Now, Leapin, Leon, or Neon Leon, or the Igniter, they're just some names that are being used. Now, BT, my old mate BT used to call you the Igniter, but I never heard who actually called you Neon Leon. Who gave you that name?
Yeah, it's a funny one. Eddie McGuire, actually.
Eddie McGuire
on the first,
gave you.
Coming into my first game, I think, they had the footy show on, and I was going through the teams and that, and he, yeah, named me Neon Leon, and it stuck.
I can understand Leon, but where did he get Neon from?
I'm not, just rhymes with it, I think. So I've never had that conversation with him before, but yeah, look, it's something that he said on that night, and it stuck ever since. And as big as the Collingwood fan base is, and the Collingwood Army, it stuck with them as well. So it's something that's been there throughout my whole career, and I still get it today from fans and people that obviously recognise me down the street and stuff like that. But yeah, it's one that I've never liked, but it stuck, so I just had to put up with it. And it's great to hear it from the fans and the enjoyment they get out of it. So it's been good.
Brother, that's because when you're good, you get a name. You've got a name. You should be proud of that. Talking about names, Joel, I mentioned before Joel Garner, the cricketer. Did they call you Big Bird?
Big Bird's my nickname, Gil, yep. Big
Bird. Are you serious? Home. It is?
Yeah. Well, the famous Joel Garner, that was his name, so they've followed suit. And Kenny Hinckley at Port used to call me that all the time around the footy club, so I'll roll with that. But have you got a better nickname than that? Or?
Oh, no, my stupid nickname's just Gilly. It's boring, but just Silly Gilly.
It works. That makes sense.
That's what my nieces and nephews call me, Silly Gilly. Anyway, all right. In 2002, you played in a losing grand final, and that was only your third season. Tell us about that, because you would have been very raw as a player back then, and how'd you find getting into the grand final so quickly after 3 years?
Yeah, look, it came around quick. You know, it's probably something you don't appreciate at the time.
Yeah,
yes. Talking about opponents before, and my hardest opponent was Chrissy Johnson. We played against the Lions, so he was there and he played.
Okay.
Made it very hard for me that day, but yeah, it you know, to come off a season of finishing on the bottom and then Mick taking over, and I got there the same time as Mick, so to play in a grand final that quickly after.
So you went from bottom to top in 1 year.
2000, after the 99 season, I think we finished down the bottom somewhere, and for Mick to come in and get the team the way he wanted and turn it around so quickly and to play off in a grand final that quickly, you know, was something that I didn't really appreciate at the time, and took a lot of learning lessons out of that, and it held me in probably good stead for the rest of my career in what I needed to do to bounce back from that.
Yeah, brother, look, one of my measurements for a footballer and his career is what he's done in his career, and you look at Bess and Ferris's, you know, if you've won BNFs and you look at those sort of things, All-Australian. Now, brother, not many blokes make the All-Australian. That means you're in the best 22 in the competition for that year. Brother, you were part of that in 2009. You made the All-Australian team. Now, that must be one of the most proudest moments of your career, no doubt.
Yeah, it was a good reward for the season that I had and the team success that we had as well. We were always big on playing your part and, you know, playing your role in that when you played. So for mine, it was forward line pressure and trying to help the team where I could in that. So obviously off the back of a solid pre-season and coming into the season and not having too many injuries, you know, I was able to have a solid season where played most of my games and really enjoyed it, had some fun and kicked a few goals in that, which actually helped. So, but yeah, I just remember it being a really enjoyable season. Worked hard during the off season and built up my fitness, so I was able to get through the middle a lot more, have more of an impact on the game. So that was a fitting reward for the season I had. It took me by surprise. I actually wasn't going to go to the All Australian Awards, and my manager actually made me go. So I was talking to him that afternoon. I'm like, I'm not going. I can't, you know, I don't like going to these things. I hate wearing a suit, all that. And he's going, you better go. You better go. You need to go. You're going to get in trouble if you don't. So he actually, turned me around to actually go. And then surprise, surprise. Like you said before, your great mate BT, he was MC that night. So when I got up and got it, it was good. And he's a great mate of mine as well, BT. So it was good to be able to have a bit of banter up on the stage with him. But But yeah, it was a surprise, but definitely drove home happy. And, you know, like I said, it was a good reward for the season that I had and the hard work I put in.
Following year, brother, 2010, coming off a great year in 2009, obviously famous grand final against the Saints,
yep.
The drawn one. Just tell us a little bit about that and what that experience was like, having a drawn grand final.
Yeah, we didn't know, no, I think anyone knew what was going on when we came a draw. it was a tough game and, you know, we battled it out with a great side in St Kilda that year. And, you know, they were pretty much the benchmark all year. So to play off against them in a grand final and for it to become a draw, I just remember people just looking at each other asking, what do we do now? What are we going to play extra time? What's happening? And, you know, it took a little while before we actually got told that we'd be back the next week. So, yeah, unfortunately, I didn't get to play the next week. Got dropped due to form and didn't actually, you know, contribute the way I wanted to in the draw. So it was understandable for myself and, you know, took it on the chin and got back to training and supported the boys during the week. And for it to back it up next week and actually win it was really pleasing. So, yeah, so went into the next week and got over them in the end and, yeah, celebrated with the boys.
Well, on that, what was that week like? Obviously, you know, there's probably a few different coaching methods and thoughts about the week. Do you train harder? Do you not train as hard? What was the idea from the coach at the time?
I think just going through the tape and going through our film and going over the game and the review, we noticed as a team that, you know, we were a little bit off in our setups and our structures. So it was just about getting back to what we did best and that's what we did as a team. So 5 metres off here or 10 metres off there, was able to fix that and it showed, you know, in the replay when, you know, we was able to win by, I think, about 30 points, I think, in the end. So,
yep.
You know, a comfortable win just because we fixed up the stuff that we were off on in the drawn one. So it wasn't a matter of working harder or, you know, getting flogged on the track. It was just going through the film and realising pretty quickly that we didn't play our best footy and our structures were off. So just had to fix that and get back to work and then get to the game and executed it and the boys played well.
And got the granny win in the end. That's awesome. And now the next year had another All-Australian season, but with a bit of a different flavour down at half back.
Yep.
Obviously different from being up forward and just want to know how did that move come about and, you know, how did you find that role in a different position?
Yeah, look, that was probably my most enjoyable season at the Pies. It was something, we rocked up to pre-season and I remember Mick saying, go down to the back line and train. And, you know, we got to the oval and the forward line walked off to the right and the back line walked off to the left, as they do every other session and in our divisions and that. And Mick sort of shouted out and said, oh, go with the back line. You know, you're going to train with them.
And I just it was
a bit different. I just started laughing and I just kept walking with the forwards. And I was just like, yeah, you know, messing around and that. So and he called out again. He said, oh, go with the backs. And he just had this straight face on him and then I didn't believe him again, so I kept walking. And then he shouted out my name. He said, come here. And I walked back to him and he said, look, we're going to try something different this year. You're going to train down back and we'll see how it goes. Just you know, enjoy yourself and have some fun down there. And, yeah, the rest is history. I was able to play down there and, you know, really focused in on the support from, you know, Nick Maxwell, the captain, and, you know, Lumumba and Heath Shaw and, you know, Ben Reid, these guys, and, you know, Nathan Brown. So it was really, really good for those guys to take me in and, I think they, you know, I think Nick Maxwell understood what Mick was trying to do and, you know, he really looked after me to just say, just beat your opponent. That's all we want. We don't want no, you know, you don't need to run the length of the ground and kick goals and stuff like that. You just need to win your one-on-ones and beat your opponent each week and that'll help us do our job as well. So coming into the pre-season cup and all that, was able to, and practice matches, was able to, you know, do all right and get some kicks and really enjoyed it. You know, the challenge of playing down back and actually locking in on someone, you know, for the first 9-10 years, you know, to play forward and have someone niggle you and, you know, play on you and try and stop you, then all of a sudden the roles reverse where, you know, I'm the one actually manning up on someone where, you know, I didn't have to man up all the time, which was fortunate and I could have a bit of fun with it. But, you know, I had that licence to do that and use the footy and, you know, one of my strengths was my kicking skills and to be able to use that off half back really set the team up a lot of occasions to score and, yeah, my defensive work that I worked really hard on and took a lot of pride in as a forward line player held me in good stead to go down back and win my one-on-ones and just play off from there. So I think, you know, from that, you know, you see the likes of, you know, Daniel Rioli and these kind of guys that, you know, Nazir Wanganeen-Miller, you know, these guys that play in that role now, it's you know, it's pleasing to see, you know. Gone are the times where our mob come to play and they're just, you know, forward pockets and be able to kick a good goal. You know, there's so much more. You know, you see Adam Goods, you see, you know, your gun midfielders running around and, you know, there's more to footy then you know, that we can deliver. So to see our guys go down back and play and excel and really enjoy it is pleasing to see. So, but yeah, like I said, that was one of my most enjoyable years. And once again, to get all Australian down back, close mate of mine is Benny Johnson, and he played backline all his whole career, and he got pretty dirty on me because I'd done in 1 year what he couldn't do in, you know, 11 years or whatever it was, playing down back, which was winning all Australian. He was one that really wanted to win that. So that was just a little bit of banter that we had, and you know, we still, you know, very, very close with him still. So you know, things like that where, you know, you become really close with your teammates, and something like that was a really great reward for myself and the hard work that I'd put in, and you know, it capped off a good season for myself.
Yeah, brother, too deadly, mate. That's two All-Australians, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, nah, well done.
Hey, boys, Ty here. Now, Leon, Collingwood have recently just come off a premiership as well, but they've had a bit of a rough start to this season. Is the premiership hangover real? And Jolie, for yourself, you've pretty clearly got a pretty big premiership hangover going at the moment. You feeling all right over there or what?
This is the first water I've had in a couple of days, so we're going all right.
Hydration. Yeah, look, as far as the club goes and the boys, you know, not the ideal start, but, you know, it's a long season and I'm confident they can turn it around. You know, they play with a lot of confidence and you know, getting back to work is something that they've talked about at the club. Fly's talked about that, just getting back to work and going through the processes and that. Like I said, like it's a long season. There's, you know, obviously no panic, you know, from the guys and that, but, you know, doing the work and getting back in there and making sure they go over the games they've played and see where, you know, they could be better in that is something that they'll do, I've got no doubt. So as far as I'm concerned, not too worried about that. It's a matter of just, yeah, banking the wins and making sure we qualify for finals and then start again. Once finals comes around, it's a different ball game. So as long as we qualify, which we won't know until, you know, late in the season. So, yeah, we'll wait till then and we'll reevaluate where we're at.
Is that something that Flyer's talked about, just steering the course and making sure that you get to the finals and then maybe you can roll over some of those more inexperienced clubs?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, you don't want to be peaking too early, you know, and that's something that, you know, Mick Malthouse was really big on, is not peaking too early and making sure that we're hitting our straps, you know, late in the season going into finals. So I've got no doubt that, you know, with Fly and the boys now, they'll, you know, they'll do what they need to do to bounce back from losing a couple of games. But, well, you know, something you got to understand as well is they didn't play, you know, average teams. They've played two quality, great opposition teams. You know, that'll be around the mark to win a flag this year. So, you know, they're no pushovers by any stretch of their imagination. So, for mine, they've come up against two quality teams and, you know, we weren't good enough on those two games, but I've got no doubt they'll bounce back and you know, we'll get to work and put the work in to be better.
So just in layman's terms, is the premiership hangover, is that a real thing? Do you believe in it?
I don't think so. I don't think so. You know, they won the flag last year and, you know, it's well documented that they celebrated it, which they should. They're very hard to win. So I think, you know, it's a new season now and, like I said, look, you can't discredit, you know, coming up against two quality sides that are very hungry and have a great game plan and play some a really, really good brand of footy. So I've got no doubt we'll bounce back as a team and, yeah, no doubt we'll be there at the end of the season ready to contend for another flag.
Hey, Mickey Malthouse. Now, he was your coach for the whole time,
yep.
The whole time you were at the Collingwood Football Club. And I love the way that he had a relationship with you because you was a young kid, you know.
Yeah,
you
definitely.
Come from Perth, you left your family.
Yep.
Well, not from Perth, you from up north.
Northern, yep.
You know, that's a little small place. All of a sudden, you're in the big time in Melbourne.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's pretty daunting for a young kid. And Mick Malthouse is there and he's looking after you. He's basically treated you like a son.
Yep.
Now, one thing I love about Mick Malthouse is what he did with David Wirrupunda when David came from Melbourne and went to West Coast Eagles.
Yeah, definitely.
He virtually went out of Warrawal College, year 11 or 12,
yep.
Straight to Perth, playing for the West Coast Eagles. Mick took him under his wing, made him stay there, looked after him. The rest is history. Look what he created. He did the same with you, brother. What a great relationship.
Yeah, look, Mick was one that, you know, looked after me when, you know, not a lot of people had a lot of faith in me through bad form and not really playing up to my standard anyway. So, you know, he stuck with me in that. But from the start, you know, he was one that supported me. He spoke about, you know, his journey and, you know, he had Chris Lewis, Peter Matera, someone by the name of Robbie Wiley from WA
was
one of his best mates. So
yes.
He spoke regularly on his relationship with those guys and he had, you know, not the ultimate understanding, but he had a bit of an understanding of what they went through in their lives and the struggles that they faced with, you know, racism and all this kind of stuff. So he had a bit of an understanding of those guys. So it definitely helped him with myself. coming from Perth and you know, moving over to Melbourne to play footy and that. So, like I said, the relationship that I was able to build with him was one that grew throughout my career, and towards the back end of it, his knowledge and understanding of, you know, my culture and what was important to me culturally really made me play a lot better footy. So, you know, full credit to Mick and him listening and taking in, you know, the information that I was giving him about my culture and what I needed as a man and a cultural man. So that's a huge benefit to Mick. And, you know, it wasn't just me he was like that with. He was like that with all of his players. He treated them all like his sons. And, you know, we all had the utmost respect for him. And you could tell on the field, you know, when the coach has a full trust of his players, they're going to go out and play for him and play their best footy. So Mick was one of those guys. And, you know, like I said, like a lot of guys would have let me go from their teams and that, but he didn't. And for me to play a lot of good footy to the back end of my career, to repay that faith to not only him but the club, was very, very pleasing for me to be able to do that.
Oh, brother, you could just feel it the way you talk about it. And I can feel the relationship just talking to you about it. But it's a bit of a coincidence that when Mick actually retired, Leon Davis retired.
Yeah, I did, yeah. That was a lot of stuff played a part in me leaving the Collingwood Football Club, a bit of contract stuff and that. But ultimately, you know, like the calling from home and, you know, my culture, you know, was always up there and probably more important than the football stuff. I think with a lot of our mob, our cultural responsibilities and our family, you know, responsibilities as well, you know, hold a higher regard than just playing footy. You know, footy's something that we love doing and we love getting out there and showcasing what we can do. But ultimately, you know, that calling from home and that calling from our culture is a higher, you know, is a higher calling for us.
It's too strong.
It's very strong. So, you know, I know for myself, and I can speak, you know, I can only speak for myself, but, you know, I retired at 30, coming off an All-Australian year, playing halfback and playing off in a grand final against Geelong. Geelong were a great side that year and they got us at in the game that mattered, which was the grand final. So, but for mine, it was, you know, I left understanding that, you know, there was something more important for me to do, which was go home and spend more time with my family and, you know, my father and get out on country. I'd been in Melbourne for 10, 11 years away from home. So you
left home when you were 17, 18?
18, yeah. Yep. Got drafted and left home. So family support was huge when I got drafted. Moved over. They came over for a bit to help me settle in. I moved in with a man the name of Alan Thorpe.
Carol,
so I moved in with them. They were,
G'day,
you know,
Thorby,
yeah,
brother, if you're watching,
yeah.
Good on
so
you.
You know, my career lies heavily on the back of, you know, them supporting me and letting me stay with them. Still very close with them, and they're like my parents over here in Melbourne, and you know, their kids are like my brothers and sisters. So very, very close with them still, and I owe them a lot of a lot for my career, how the way it panned out. But you know, when I went home, I was able to grow culturally, get back on country, and do a lot of stuff with my father, and that's led me to become the man I am now. And, you know, I'm back at the Collingwood Football Club now in a work capacity, working on the cultural environment and stuff that we're trying to do at the club. So
you're doing that now?
I'm the cultural development manager at the club. And that's just making sure that it's a safe space, first and foremost, for our First Nations people, but, you know, all walks of life, you know, very multicultural society at the moment. So having that at the club and making sure it's open to all and everyone feels welcome, you know, there's no doubt why, you know, Bobby can play the game he did last year in the grand final and dominate and do what he did. Ash Johnson, the same, you know, Nathan, everyone that comes there, whether it's playing footy or in a work capacity. And then off the back of that, you know, it's important for us to at the club to recognise that how big the club is and the following they have.
Yes.
So we can influence, you know, so much more people from the work we do inside those four walls that branches out to our supporter group, our fan base and all that there. And then
that's where culture starts.
Definitely.
And what
definitely.
I mean culture, I've been to systems where there's no culture whatsoever. Definitely. You can make a massive cultural difference.
Definitely, definitely. And that's the aim. Look, everything I do there now is, and while I was passionate about getting back there to work, was to have that influence on society, on our fan base, on everyone that, you know, goes for Collingwood Football Club. We all understand. And
biggest fan base in Australia.
Definitely. And it's well documented, the history of the Collingwood Football Club, and it wasn't very great with racism. We all understand that. But I think the work that we're doing now, we've come forward so far and we can influence so many people. So we're on that journey still, and there's still a lot of work to do, but very passionate about that. So if I didn't retire when I did and didn't go back and do a lot of my cultural responsibilities,
and obviously it would have taken me longer to get to where I am now and to be back at the club. So very fortunate that I did retire. I would have liked to have, looking back, I would have liked to have played a bit longer, but, you know, it was just more important and enjoyable to get back home and spend it with my two brothers, my family, you know, my parents and all my cousins and that, to catch up on time lost because I came over to play footy. So it all worked out in the end, and, yeah, a little bit of stuff about why I retired and that, but, yeah, fast forward to now, I'm happy with that decision and, yeah, was able to go back home and do a lot of cultural stuff that I just love doing.
Do you have any advice, brother, for the young mob that come through that might move away from home at a young age, whether for school or for opportunities in cities? Any advice for them at, you know, 16, 17 coming through that might keep them in good stead?
Yeah, look, I think just making sure that, you know, your football club, your workspace, and we don't have to stay on the sports side of it. For mine, if you're going off country and you're leaving your family and stuff like that, as long as where you're going, that environment's a safe one for you, and you're having those conversations on how it can be a safe environment for yourself, it's going to go a long way to not only you staying there longer, but the output you'll give that workplace or that football team, netball team, whatever it is, it's going to be more impactful and more powerful, you know what I mean? Like it going into a space like I did where it wasn't culturally safe, you know, I felt like I couldn't share my culture, I couldn't, you know, be myself and be proud of my culture in that space because it wasn't held in such in the higher regard that football is. And, you know, I understood I was there to play footy and all that kind of stuff. But for mine, it's making sure you're having those conversations and people that, you know, your support networks are there as well.
Yeah.
You know, for our young mob, it's very hard to open up. And you find your voice at certain times in your own journey. But for mine, it's making sure the environment you go into is a safe one where, you know, they celebrate everyone's cultures. You know, they celebrate and they give you the most opportunity to excel at your job and what you're trying to do. So, but family support is key. Being connected to your culture is key. And I find if you got those two things, you're held in pretty good stead to make good decisions and work hard and obviously stand up for what you believe in. And that environment will create itself and you can go about, you know, being the best you can be and being connected to your culture.
Oh, look, that's brilliant what you just said then. And look, you know, you can make a difference on the football field, but more importantly, you can make a more of a difference what you can do off the field. And look, it's been a great conversation, brother, and well done to the AFL for, you know, I only just found out from Joel that they've actually got these positions at every football club in the AFL. So well done. That's where it all starts. That's where it's all going to change. Leon Davis, thanks for coming on the show, brother. You've been an absolute champion, and the good thing is you're still flying the flag for our mob, brother. You keep doing it and keep it up. Joel Garner, you need to go home and have some sleep because you just got back from Darwin. Brother, you keep up the good work that you're doing with the AFL and doing at Richmond, and thanks for coming on the show,
thanks,
brother.
Thanks, Gilly. Silly Gilly, thanks for that.
Silly Gilly, new nickname.
Nah, no worries. And, hey, guess what?
Thank you.
Hope you enjoyed the show. Kicking back with Gilbert McAdam. I'll be back next week.